learn how to better communicate with the public in general and with the media.
Juneau police take lessons from Ferguson for interacting with citizens. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Friday, August 29th. Good evening, I'm Ellen Lockyer. Also tonight, a Haines bar owner finds an unusual source for songwriting inspiration.
And then I went, oh my God, these are song hooks. I'm like, why didn't I get it? These are song hooks. And that's when I set the goal of writing an album.
Tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by Wells Fargo, extending its support of Alaska residents beyond banking by supporting the programming of public radio throughout Alaska, giving back to the community. Wells Fargo, together we'll go far. And by Crowley, celebrating 60 years in Alaska, Crowley knows Alaska and uses that experience to deliver project solutions from concept to completion. More at CrowleyAlaska.com.
Alaska Marine Highway System captains and deck officers have avoided a strike that could have shut down ferry service across the state this weekend. Instead, the International Organization of Master Mates and Pilots will return to the bargaining table with state officials. Earlier this month, the union rejected a tentative contract agreement that included no pay increase this year, a 1% raise next year, and a 2% increase in 2016. MMP asked the state to reopen negotiations, or members would go on strike this Saturday. Union Representative Ron Brissett says the proposed wage increase does not go far enough and will force members to continue working overtime.
They have to man the ships and they just don't have adequate personnel to do that anymore. So one of the concerns is that they have to look at paying the deck officers enough and paying them an industry standard wage in order to recruit and retain new deck officers as well as keep the deck officers that they currently have.
Administration Commissioner Curtis Thayer says Alaska Marine Highway workers are already well compensated and the state needs to shrink the agency's growing budget.
They're in line with what has been accepted with the other bargaining units across the state. The wages are the same. The state is in a fiscal situation where we don't have a lot of money to give.
Both sides have signed an agreement to reopen negotiations as soon as possible with a federal mediator. If mediation fails, language in the agreement says either party could declare an impasse, setting up binding arbitration. Masters, Mates, and Pilots represents about 100 licensed captains and deck officers. The largest union for state ferry workers agreed this week to a contract similar to the one rejected by MMP. The Inland Boatmen's Union of the Pacific represents about 650 Alaska Marine Highway employees. A third ferry workers union, the Marine Engineers Beneficial Association, has yet to vote on its tentative contract agreement. With the recent unrest in Ferguson, Missouri, police departments across the country are under a lot of scrutiny. Questions are being raised about use of force, police militarization, and racial profiling. Against that backdrop, the Juneau Police Department this week launched a new outreach program called Coffee with a Cop. KTOO's Casey Kelly reports.
It's a busy Wednesday morning at the Heritage Coffee Shop on 2nd Street in downtown Juneau. A mix of tourists and locals are sipping lattes and eating fresh-baked treats. Police Chief Bryce Johnson sits at a table near the front door talking with Noelle Dursay. The young mother of three lives downtown and says she loves it, but she feels like the area is kind of sketchy.
A couple of years ago, it was really bad. Broken windows all the time. Every Saturday morning when we took our walk, just filth and, you know, vomit and feces and, like, everything all over the streets.
Dursay says she came to Coffee with a Cop to talk to police about increasing patrols in her neighborhood. Overall, she thinks the Juneau Police Department does a good job.
They work really well, like, one-on-one with people. I just want more. I want to see them more. I want to know they're out here.
Larry Spangler is president of the Thane Neighborhood Association, a community watch group for residents who live a few miles outside downtown. She calls JPD officers helpful and approachable and says events like this foster good relations between the police department and the community.
Especially with recent publicity in the nation about police troubles, I mean, don't think we have that sense of that here, and this kind of thing would help even make it less likely that people would think of the police as other.
At a recent interview in his office, Juneau Police Chief Bryce Johnson says he's followed the events in Ferguson through the media. He's thought a lot about how he would handle a similar situation and says it's important for people to remember that there are a lot of unknowns. But the big lesson...
We need to learn how to better communicate with the public in general and with the media.
Since coming to Juneau a little more than a year ago, Johnson has consistently talked about wanting police to be an open and trusted part of the community.
We don't live in police states. They call it a thin blue line for a reason.
Johnson brought the coffee with a cop idea with him from Salt Lake City, where he worked for 20 years. He says trust is important because police are only part of the crime prevention puzzle.
When you look at what causes crime, it has a lot to do with economic opportunity. It has to do with family status. It has to do with drugs and alcohol. These are all problems that the police department cannot fix. And so what we have to do is we have to partner with other community agencies, other community entities, other people, and be part of a solution.
One of the biggest criticisms leveled at police in Ferguson has dealt with the militarization of law enforcement. Johnson thinks that's an unfair characterization. He says the Juneau Police Department has received some surplus military gear from the federal government, namely fully automatic weapons and body armor for the SWAT team. But he says it's only used under special circumstances and always to ensure the safety of officers and the public.
I don't think it is a bad thing that the police department is getting this type of protective equipment. I think a better conversation would be is when do you use it, when do you deploy it.
Back at the coffee shop, downtown patrol officer Jim Quinto says he doesn't feel much negativity or hostility toward Juneau police. Quinto grew up here and has been on the force for 17 years. He says efforts like Coffee with a Cop will only improve communication between the department and residents.
Like when I walk around, I'm constantly going into stores and saying hi to people and just so they know that we're out there.
JPD hopes to make Coffee with a Cop an ongoing program with events every month or two in different neighborhoods. Chief Johnson says it doesn't cost anything and hopefully it'll make the department more accessible. In Juneau, I'm Casey Kelly.
Sunday is the deadline for comments to FEMA or the Federal Emergency Management Agency on a policy carrying out a law that would allow tribes to request emergency and major disaster declarations. As it is now, only state governors can request a federal disaster declaration. Tribes had requested the change, saying it would save time if they didn't have to wait for state action when they're often the only governmental entity in an area. Ken Murphy, director of FEMA Region 10, which includes Alaska, says requests for disaster declarations do have strings attached.
FEMA, in most cases, only pays for 75% of the disaster, and the government, in this case the tribal government, that would be responsible for 25% of the cost. And then some of the paperwork that's required, such as having an emergency operations plan or a hazard mitigation plan.
Some tribes have already suggested that the criteria be changed to accommodate smaller tribes. A summary of comments received as of August 8th is available at the FEMA website. The agency is accepting comments electronically at its website through Sunday. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, Denali National Park celebrates the 50th anniversary of the Wilderness Act.
Just because you've got the wilderness doesn't mean it's going to stay forever. You've got to defend it. You know, you've got to protect it.
Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Alaska Pipeline Service Company, committed to safety, operating the 800-mile Trans-Alaska Pipeline since 1977. And by Nana Regional Corporation and Tech Alaska, celebrating 25 years of resource development and partnership at the Red Dog Mine.
A cold front is ushering in wet, chilly conditions across much of the state.
Winter's on its way.
The Alaska Department of Transportation reported 3 inches of snow and dead horse earlier this afternoon. National Weather Service meteorologist Scott Berg in Fairbanks is tracking the system sweeping in from the northwest.
And that's going to move through the state, and with it, it's going to bring some showers and even some snow up north.
Snow is expected in the northern Brooks Range and North Slope through today. It will remain rain to the south, but a seasonal wake-up call. The first widespread frost is expected across the interior as skies clear tonight and early on Saturday.
Probably going to see a pretty hard frost just about everywhere north of the Alaska Range. Up near the Brooks Range will be the coldest area, but around Fairbanks, we can expect temperatures down around freezing and even into the 20s in our colder spots.
For much of South Central Alaska, temperatures on Sunday morning are expected to be in the 30s. In the northern Susitna Valley, temperatures could dip into the 20s. Berg expects the cool down to continue into next week.
We're getting to that time of the year. We're going to keep the cool air around. We might see it warm just a little bit, but then we have another front that's going to work its way in through the weekend that's going to bring some even colder air down, so kind of reinforce the cooler air that's already here. Anticipation is that we could see probably some more frost over the next several days beyond that.
Decreasing daylight contributes to the cooling. Fairbanks is losing more than 6 minutes of light a day, and Anchorage is losing more than 5 minutes a day. Denali National Park is celebrating the 50th anniversary of the 1964 Wilderness Act in the next weeks. A series of events marking the historic conservation legislation is planned, and as KUAC's Tim Ellis reports, the commemoration kicks off tonight with a talk by Fairbanks author and environmentalist Frank Kiam.
Denali Park and Preserve spokeswoman Chris Pfister says the park's been hosting events throughout the summer about the Wilderness Act. She says tonight's talk by Kiam at the Murie Science and Learning Center will outline the history of the landmark environmental legislation and the challenges that lie ahead.
He will be taking an in-depth look at the Wilderness Act, exploring the intent of its founders and their aspirations for the future.
Kiam says he'll talk about his personal connection to wild places, which he's chronicled over the years through his writings and photos, and share some thoughts about why it's essential to preserve those places.
And I do this with photos that I've taken over the last 40 years, you know, in these wildernesses, in these wild places that I've been in, you know, that I've traveled in by canoe, you know, trekking, rafting, etc.
Kiam has seen a lot of that backcountry since coming to Alaska in 1961, both as an explorer and guide. He graduated from the University of Alaska Fairbanks and taught there before heading out west to work as a school teacher for 21 years in the Yukon River Delta. He's a writer, poet, photographer, and longtime environmentalist. He helped commemorate the first Earth Day at UAF and helped found the Northern Alaska Environmental Center, and he served on its board and in leadership positions with the Audubon Society. Kiam says he's gained a deep appreciation for wild places after a lifetime of tramping about in them, and he's come to understand the importance of preserving them. In an interview at his home in the Goldstream Valley, Kiam says protecting wild places is an ongoing challenge that wilderness advocates must be prepared to meet in the coming years.
Just because you've got the wilderness doesn't mean it's going to stay forever. You've got to defend it. You know, you've got to protect it.
Kiam says that's why he looks forward to presentations like tonight's, so he can pass along that message, especially to young people, to prepare them to take up the challenge and take over leadership of the environmental movement. In Fairbanks, I'm Tim Ellis.
The U.S. District Court of Appeals for the Ninth Circuit released an announcement today that it would rehear the Tongass Roadless Rule exemption case. The roadless rule was established more than a decade ago, but the Tongass was granted an exemption. A lawsuit challenging that exemption was filed in 2009 by a coalition of conservation groups and the Organized Village of Cake. A U.S. District Court judge agreed with the petitioners, but the state of Alaska appealed that decision to the Ninth Circuit. In March, a 3-judge panel of the appeals court issued an opinion that the roadless rule should not apply to Alaska's Tongass National Forest, but Friday's announcement states that the full 11-judge panel will review the case. A $1.5 million grant from the National Science Foundation will fund a 5-year pilot project to help American Indian and Alaska Native college students achieve advanced degrees in science, technology, engineering, and math, or STEM subjects. KNBA's Jacqueline Estes reports.
National Science Foundation Program Officer Sally O'Connor says the Lighting the Pathway project is aimed at full-time college students, undergraduate or graduate, majoring in science, math, computer science, or engineering. She says NSF wants to encourage Native Americans with an aptitude for STEM subjects to reach their full potential.
There is so much talent in the Native community, and it's mainly untapped. And hopefully this project will make a little dent into that and bring out the talent so that they can become leaders in our country.
O'Connor says several factors contribute to the low number of Native Americans with advanced degrees and tenured faculty positions in STEM, a lack of role models, and inadequate academic training, which she says is related to inadequate funding of schools on reservations and in rural areas.
I mean, if we provide them with the same resources we give the best schools in the cities, those students will be well prepared. But the sad fact is that that's not happening.
Participants will receive a stipend of $2,500 over 2 years, plus funding to travel to meetings and program events. Each student will be teamed up with a mentor, an expert in the field they're studying, to set goals and get some training and support to achieve them. The project itself will be evaluated to find out what works and what doesn't to help in the design of future programs. Herb Schroeder is vice provost and founder of the Alaska Native Science and Engineering Program, or ANSEP, at University of Alaska Anchorage. He says the mentoring is important to get students socially and academically prepared for college, but he says ANSEP starts at an earlier age. This year, they're working with 868 kids in middle school.
In our middle school program, 83% of the kids finish Algebra 1 before they graduate from 8th grade. And the national average for that is 26%. So, and then they're on track. You know, when they're freshmen in high school, they can immediately come to our campus and start taking math and science courses from university professors that count for university credit and high school credit. And that's how we're getting the students hyper-prepared.
Schroeder says students can also apply for scholarships through ANSEP.
The students, once they arrive at the university, are eligible for scholarship funds. It's merit-based scholarships that are $5,000 a year. Plus, we connect the students with internships with all of our partner organizations so that they can make up the difference that they need to go to school.
And for the students who go to graduate school, ANSEP kicks up the financial support.
Once they're in graduate school, we offer stipends for students for master's and PhD students of $30,000 total over the course of their graduate studies. Plus, we pay their tuition and connect them with research projects so that they can complete their degree programs.
To provide that level of support, ANSEP has 70 partners who help support the $7.5 million program. Still, Schroeder hopes ANSEP students will be able to take advantage of the national program. Reporting in Anchorage, I'm Jock Lanestis.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by BP Alaska. As part of their commitment to Alaska, BP and their employees are investing in over 400 education and service organizations in communities across the state. More at alaska.bp.com. And by Northern Air Cargo, providing year-round transportation of all types of freight, from vehicles and oversized equipment to small packages for corporations or small business. Northern Air Cargo, serving Alaska since 1956. The Medallion Foundation and Federal Aviation Administration set standards for the operation of aircraft and airports. More information at faa.gov/go/flyalaska. This message is sponsored by the Medallion Foundation.
Ketchikan,
Kotzebue,
Dillingham,
Sitka,
Chugiak,
Fairbanks,
Fort Yukon,
Wrangell,
Barrow,
Unalaska, Dutch Harbor,
Alaknarechamute.
This is AK on Alaska News Nightly. I'm Lisa Fu. This week on AK, Dreamers. It's hard not to dream big among the tall mountains and wild sea in southeast Alaska. That may be especially true in Haines, where Christy Tang serves dreamers and misfits alike in her family's downtown institution, the Pioneer Bar and Bamboo Room. Even she has a dream to meet the famous person who has inspired her and propelled her to become a star in her hometown. From member station KHNS in Haines, Margaret Friedenauer reports.
Christy Tang's hopes one day to meet Dr. Phil McGraw, the talk show host. But why she wants to meet him and the journey of how she's trying to achieve that is becoming a bigger story than the dream itself. First, a little background. Tang's grew up here in this bar and restaurant her parents operated, the Bamboo Room and Pioneer Bar. She had a loving family and good friends, but also an alcoholic father and some hard Scrabble times. Tang said she always had a way with words and songwriting, and when she was 27, she got the chance to go to the Berklee College of Music in Boston.
Because most of the students there really, they were players. And I'm more of a lyricist, you know, I'm all about words. And so it was a good opportunity for me to, you know, play with a lot of different people, write with a lot of different people.
After graduation, Tang's went to Nashville. She had an offer to work with CBS staff songwriters, but her dad called her home to Haines.
And I was way too long, you got to get back here. And then I just came back and I never left. And of course I fell in love, you know, married, raised my kids.
She kept writing. She's known for penning poems for special friends and events around Haines. And several years ago, Tang's found a new inspiration for her prose. The Dr. Phil show would be playing on the TV as she readied the bar to open each day.
Every time he'd have one of his little zingers, I'd write it down and then share it with my friends. And I had piles and piles of notes. And then one day a friend was having a hard time. And I said, oh, let me send you my Dr. Phil quotes. And I started typing them up. And then I went, oh, my God, these are song hooks. I'm like, why didn't I get it? These are song hooks. And that's when I set the goal of writing an album.
She decided she wanted to seek Dr. Phil out and have him hear her songs. She traveled back to Nashville and cut a demo with 21 songs. Then she went to Los Angeles. She got her CD into the hands of people associated with Dr. Phil, but she's never heard from him. Her story did catch the eye of Seattle filmmakers who have been chronicling Tang's story for a documentary called Above the Bamboo Room. As part of the film, they organized a recent concert in Haines to showcase Tang's Dr. Phil songs, as performed by local musicians.
Everything you do has a consequence.
Money. The show drew a crowd of about 400 people. And if you didn't know the premise, you probably wouldn't have noticed that Dr. Phil one-liners were hidden in the songs. Like this one, written about Dr. Phil's advice to rise above your raising. Decked out in t-shirts with Dr. Phil's face on them, the Haines band Perpetual Beer Run performed that song. At the end of the evening, the filmmakers asked the crowd to hold up signs in the audience and recorded a scene for the documentary, trying again to catch Dr. Phil's attention.
Dr. Phil, please listen!
No one knows if the film will finally get Dr. Phil to notice Tang's, but the concert certainly attracted the attention of the community.
It was so quirky and so beautiful. Everybody was just wonderful.
Some friends had heard about Tang's offbeat dream before now, but she says she kept it pretty quiet, worried it sounded too crazy for her to be taken seriously. But it was Tang's talent as a songwriter that really got people's attention. Her longtime friend Deborah Schnabel says she knew all along Tang's was exceptional.
Well, I pretty much told her that she was probably born to be a musician and a songwriter, not a dishwasher and an accountant.
The documentary on Tang's is still in production. And she keeps writing, because, like Dr. Phil says, life rewards action.
Can't you take some time for us? Won't you lead the way?
Reporting in Haines, I'm Margaret Friedenauer.
Now it's time for 300 Villages. This week, we're heading to the Yukon River community of Anvik.
My name is William Koso. I'm from Anvik, Alaska. I'm the mayor of Anvik. It's just a nice little town, quiet on the river, Anvik River in Yukon, where they merge. Upriver, we have Grayling, that's 18 miles upriver, and Holy Cross is about 40 miles downriver. A lot of boat travelers in the summer and snowmachine travelers in the winter. Right now everybody's putting up fish and a lot of construction going on. We've got a couple new houses being built. Four new houses being built. So a lot of work going on in town. There's about 75 of us here right now. It's been pretty steady at where we've been at for the last 14 years, I think. Beautiful. Lots of trees. Green. Beautiful here in summer and the winter time. I look forward to fall because moose season's coming up. Oh, yes, everybody here usually gets a moose. And we got the Iditarod. It's going to be coming through this year, next year. Everybody enjoys it when they come here. I sit with my friend Wendell and watch them ride right by the house.
William Koso is the mayor of Anvik. 300 Villages is AK's attempt to put every community in Alaska on the radio. If you want to hear your town on the show, send us an email at news@alaskapublic.org. Thanks for listening to AK this week. We had help from Margaret Friedenauer, Annie Feit, and Dave Waldron. Tune in next week for more unique stories from around the state. I'm Lisa Fu.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. We had reports tonight from Casey Kelly in Juneau, Jocelyn Estes in Anchorage, Dan Bross in Fairbanks, and Tim Ellis in Delta. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Monica Gokey is our web producer. I'm Ellen Lockyer.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Doyon Limited, Interior Alaska's regional native corporation, providing oil field services, government contracting, and natural resource development in Alaska and across the nation. Information at doyon.com.
And by
ExxonMobil Alaska, where more than 1,000 Alaskan men and women are working on the Point Thompson project, proving energy lives here. Public Employees Local 71 asks you to slow down in construction zones while they work to keep roads safe. Public Employees Local 71, working hard for Alaska. Alaska laborers and the Alaska Department of Transportation and Public Facilities also know the importance of safe driving in construction zones. This message sponsored by Public Employees Local 71. Check the status of your permanent fund dividend application at pfd.alaska.gov. August 31st is the deadline for contributing to a college savings plan and to add or change charitable contributions. This message sponsored by the State of Alaska.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.